Charlie Kirk is gone. But the one bright spot in all of this is that a lot of people are coming back to church right now. And that's a good thing. So why am I not as happy as everyone else? Why am I still the bad Christian who thinks unless something changes, we're still headed for a collapse? Well, it's because I've been listening to the people who aren't coming back. We'll get into that in a second. But first, let's look at what's happening right now. Like, look at what Not the Bee posted. Charlie Kirk brought thousands of people to church on Sunday. Significant boost in millennials and Zoomers at church today. I've been struggling with my faith, but hey, I walked back to church. This person says, what do they say? Nothing will stop what's coming. I wish that that was true. Except that I've seen this before. I saw it in 2001 after 9/11. And then we saw it again in 2008, the financial crash. We saw it in 2016 when church became a lot more political. And people thought then our side won. And so we're going to see this great revival come back to this nation. We saw it again in 2020. We saw churches saying, hey, there's more people attending online than we've ever had in our doors. And all those times people were like, wow, people are, they're struggling. They're hurting. They're looking for something. They're looking for answers and direction and they're scared and they want peace. The revival is on the way. I heard that every single time, except that's not quite what happened, was it? I want to show you guys a graph really quick. Things were relatively stable until you hit the early 90s and bam, we just fell off a cliff. And then you hit right here. This is right around where 2001 happens and it levels off for a little bit. Again, you see a little spike right here around 2008. And then again in 2016, right as we hit around 2020, that's another little uptick and people get really excited. But do you notice something about this graph? Even with all of those upswings, which direction does it still move? Pretty sharp. And nothing seems to be slowing it down. So we have to ask that question, why? In spite of all these moments where God was reaching out to the nation, the things were happening. God was working in people's hearts. He was drawing people to himself. And yet for some reason, we still see this. I would suggest it's because we're only looking at the front door, not the back. When we have these moments, we focus on the people coming in. We're seeing people get saved and we're seeing baptisms and all that stuff. And we should celebrate that stuff. We're doomed if it doesn't happen, right? And those souls are doomed if that doesn't happen. What I'm saying is that's where all the attention goes. What we don't see is the back door when people leave. That's not a moment that gets celebrated or talked about or noticed. So that's not a part of our perception. What this graph shows is that, yes, we might have a front door where lots of people are coming in and it's really exciting, but we have an even bigger back door where people are leaving. So we have to ask the question, why? Well, I want to show you guys one more thing. Yeah, about 40% of church attendees are male. And if you look at the Pew Research, the trend is that men are leaving faster than women are. So why are we bleeding men out the back door right now? Well, it could be because there's something broken in the church. Because here's the thing, Charlie tried to tell these guys to do the right thing. He tried. He told them, go to church, find a good woman, get married, settle down, have kids, have a family, because he knew that those were the happiest people. I mean, let's watch a clip of him talking about this.
You go fact check me, put the numbers up. The most depressed people in America are women without children. They're the most likely to be on antidepressants. Who are the happiest women in America? Married women with children.
Yeah. Married mothers and fathers are the happiest. And he knew that. And you need this for a healthy society. So he told the young guys to go start their own. And a bunch of them listened. They went to church. And you know what they found? Women didn't want them. And he was starting to realize that. Let's look a bit later in this video.
The problem with women is that many of them, A, have unrealistic expectations of the man that they want, a lot of them. And I deal with this all the time. Like, I want a guy that's earning $1 million a year and he's 6'4". And I want him to have a perfect jaw. And I'm like, yeah, that's never going to happen. How about, by the way, you know where on your list is like, I want someone who will be a good father or someone with good character. So that's like really disgusting, actually, that you just want someone that's like super rich and looks good.
What happens is you have this large group of women who all want the same things. We treat it like it's this just random thing. Like women just randomly become attracted to random men. And yeah, the chances are low, but because it's random, if you just keep hitting that slot machine over and over again, eventually you get your win. But it's not random, is it? There's a very specific set of stuff that women want, and only a tiny fraction of men have enough of it. So those men get all of the attention from women. The rest of them get nothing. And the math dictates that there are not enough willing women to go around for all of the men. It doesn't matter how many times they spin that lottery wheel, it's not going to land on them. Some people, the standard advice is all they need. Dr. K talks about this. Just put in some effort. Go take a shower, get cleaned up, go to the gym, serve at your church, put yourself out there and try. And for some people, that's all they need. because they have the building blocks. They have the genes and the IQ. They have the social capacity. They have the building blocks there. They just need someone to tell them to put it together. And Charlie did that. And a lot of guys did. And he scooped up the ones that had the stuff and it worked for them. But what a lot of guys found was that the bar for most women today is so high that if you're missing just one of those building blocks, it will not matter how much effort you put in. You will never be able to meet her standards. And that's just the standards. Even when guys do successfully find a wife or even just get a date, a lot of these guys are finding that the women that they're being rewarded with for all of that effort to become all of these things that women want, these women just are not wife material because no one has ever held them accountable to anything. Not in church even. Because that's what we tell ourselves, right? Oh, Christian women aren't anything like the evil, worldly women you see on the whatever podcast. Because look at how innocent and sweet they are at church. So we didn't bother to check in and see what was going on under the surface, let alone hold them accountable or discipline them for anything. All of that went to the guys. So when all these problems started popping up with relationships, we figured, nah, it can't have been the girls. They're too sweet to have done anything wrong. It's got to be those mean, nasty boys. So we put all the discipline on them and let the girls go. Except now the church girls are starting to show up on the Whatever podcast, and all the stuff they've been hiding under the sweetness is coming out into the light. It looks an awful lot like our "the girls are fine, blame the boys" strategy might have been a mistake. Charlie had the right idea, but he didn't know how broken the church is right now. Our fruit is rotten through and through with the sin of favoritism. We beat the snot out of the men for years because we agreed with the feminists. We agreed with feminists that men are the cause of every problem, that they are the problem, and that men are responsible to fix every problem. We also agreed with feminists that women are just better people than men. We don't say that, we don't teach that, but watch the way we act. When you zoom out and you look at who actually gets held accountable, who gets disciplined, who gets spoken about from the pulpit, it's not women. You hear men getting obliterated all the time. There's way more accountability and discipline is placed on the men. Even when we do acknowledge that women aren't perfect, we always have to do it through a lens of, yeah, but men. When the men mess up, which they do, I'm not saying they're perfect. We do kind of suck. That's fine. But the difference is when we point it out, we focus on it. We churn on it and we shove it in their faces. Guys, this is what you're doing. We don't bring the women into it at all to make it fair. When we talk about women's sins or mistakes, we always have to say men are just as bad, right? Or they're worse, so that it doesn't look unfair. They cry, oh, it's unfair. It's unfair that you're criticized. No, it's not. No, what you're really doing is you're deflecting to get the attention away from you. Get the attention off of me. Get it away from me. I don't want anybody actually examining my heart or examining my sin. Get it away from me. Get it back over to the guys where it belongs. And the men have been trying to tell us about this for a while, and we ignored them and instead listened to the ladies' complaints. We played favorites and lost a generation of men because of it. These men couldn't pair up with women. They got no respect from the married men. And when they got sick of the loneliness, the heartache, the total disrespect that we showed them, they left. Oh, but we never disrespected them, except that we assume the worst about them whenever they fail. We assume that they're losers and cowards and perverts and slobs. And if you actually go and meet them, they're not. Most of the guys that I've coached, you would be scratching your head why they would need coaching. They're doing great. Women should want them, but they don't. We assume everything is their fault and we're wrong because we assume it cannot have been the women's fault. Even though women are the ones who decide if a relationship happens, I think you could easily argue that what you're seeing from the men is a reaction to that. They're not just leaving out of nowhere. They're getting tired and fed up with the favoritism and the way that women are treating them. And I know some people will say, okay, I don't get it. Where are you seeing this imbalance? Which sins are we doing this with? Well, here's a list of them. Biggest one on it is pride. Once you see it, it's so obvious. It's so easy to draw the line from the sin to its bad fruit. The impossibly high standards and the selfishness, all that stuff, all of it stems from a root of pride that we do nothing about. And I know people will still say, okay, yeah, but we deal with these sins. We talk about it. We preach against these. We hold people accountable. No, we don't. Not fairly. Think of it this way. For every sin, there's a male version, a universal version, and a female version. When we're dealing with these sins, we almost always tackle the male and universal versions. We don't touch the female version of it. standards. This is a good example of this. When the guys have standards for girls that are too high, we will tell them directly, hey guys, you're being prideful. You're thinking too highly of yourself. You deserve nothing because you're a dirty, evil sinner. So just be grateful that you have an opportunity with anyone. But when the girls have impossibly high standards that are stratospherically higher than the guys, what do we say? Well, no, it's not that the ladies' standards are high. It's just that the men suck and they're just not good enough. And this has consequences. Let me draw this out. Pirate software is not a thing anymore. He's not using it anymore. So let's do this. So let's say you've got men and you've got women. The men sin an amount and the women sin an amount. This is what we start with. But men and women don't quite sin the same way, do they? Men are more aggressive. They're more overt. They say what they mean and mean what they say. It's obvious. It's clear. It's easy to define it and put it into a box and say that's sin. When women sin, it's covert, right? It's out of sight. It's in the shadows and in the gray areas. It's more relational. It's more about connections and subtexts, things that guys don't really perceive as well or understand. Men's sin is overt. Women's sin is covert. So we perceive that women are the more noble sex. They're the fairer sex, right? They're the better half. So when you have men of influence in the church, teachers and pastors and people who are speaking to this sin, they're the ones who are tasked with holding people accountable for it. They see the overt sins. They don't see the covert sins. So what do? They preach messages against the stuff that the men are doing. They create programs and accountability groups for men. Well, women, we just let them go. Let them police themselves. They'll be fine. And besides, we don't really want to try to police them because they get very angry if we do try. They rip our heads off for it and they deflect it back over to the men. So then what happens? Well, for the men, you're playing a constant game of whack-a-mole with their sin. Maybe it gets better for a little bit. Maybe it gets a little bit worse. Things sort of hold steady. For the women, it increases a little bit because no one's holding them accountable. No one's keeping it even in check. The covert sins that nobody notices or really understands just keep growing. Keeps getting worse. And then another decade goes by and it gets a little worse on top of that. And again, nobody's noticing it. It gets even bigger than that and more. And then what happens? Well, we know that sin always produces bad fruit. It's always destructive. So yeah, sure, men have got some bad fruit that's, you know, being pooped out from their sin. But then you have all of this over here that no one is holding them, the ladies accountable for. And their sin creates bad fruit too. But what happens after that? So you got these pastors and leaders going, oh, wow, look at this. Look at all this bad fruit over here. It's making everybody miserable. Relationships are completely falling apart. The courtship process is breaking down. Nobody's getting married. Families aren't forming. And then because there's no families, the whole culture and society breaks down. And pastors are seeing the bad fruit. They're seeing how it disaffects people, but they don't see where it came from. So this doesn't exist. They do see the overt sins of the men. So where do they think this came from? They look around for something to blame it on and they see the overt sins of the men. And they go, wow, this must have come from that. Let's beat up the men a bunch more. Men, you suck. Men, you're sinning so much. Men, you are the problem. Men, if you would just step up and do better, we wouldn't have all these problems. But the guys are now frustrated because they are starting to notice all of this stuff here. They're starting to connect the dots. Guys start noticing, oh, hey, wait a second. No, this covert stuff, that's not nothing. That is women in their flesh and no one's holding them accountable for it. We're not perfect. Fine. But there's a lot more going on over on this side because we've been pummeled for years and we've tried to do our best. The ladies have been let off scot-free and their sin has grown and piled on top of itself for decades now. They start to get frustrated with the pastors who are beating the snot out of them. They see the imbalance and they go, no, I'm not putting up with this anymore. Eventually, they just reach their breaking point and they hit that big back door. Pastors notice that and go, hey, whoa, these guys are leaving. I'm down to 40%. This is bad. What should I do about that? Well, a quarterly pancake breakfast. Yes, that will solve the problem. And when that inevitably doesn't work, because of course it won't, the structural problems that have been sending men out the door in the first place are still there. They then conclude that, of course, because they don't see any of this, it must have been the men. Can't possibly have been anything that we were doing. It must just be because these guys are bad. They're hard-hearted. They don't love Jesus enough. So they condemn the men who leave and say, it's their fault. There's nothing we could have done. But to the guys who left, we look just like the feminists who've been trying to exploit them, who've been blaming them for every problem, and then demand that men fix everything so that the women don't have to repent. And yes, the front door is big, but the back door gets bigger because we played favorites and we didn't pick men. And when we see that they've left, what do we say? Oh yeah, that shows where their heart really was. Yeah, they didn't want Jesus. They were just here for the women. They just wanted to get laid. That's where their heart really was. So obviously this is their own fault, except that it's not. And even if that is why they're here, that's not wrong. God commands them to be fruitful and multiply, to find a wife if they burn with a passion, which they do. God placed intensely strong desires on their soul to obey those commands and fulfill those purposes he made them for. It's not wrong for them to want that. But we are so dedicated to seeing them as the problem that we had to make it wrong because we played favorites and we didn't pick them. We have to think for a second about just how frustrated these guys are with this. If you just go look through the comments on even a lot of the videos that like Charlie was posting, guys are saying in the long run, the costs are just not worth it. Look at this guy saying like Charlie Kirk is finally moving away from men are the problem, but he's wrong when he insinuates that men could improve the dating pool by more self-control. All the men I know that work out every day and go to church are good, honest, hardworking men and have the hardest time dating. These are on one of my videos. Growing up in a conservative Christian household, I always seen the double standards between me and my sister. In recent years, no matter what I did, get in shape, work long hours, get good grades, did chores, etc., my parents would say, I'm not working hard enough. But my sister could be rude, make messes, demand for money, and is even an atheist, but not a single criticism. This is someone referencing the way that we speak to women. Soft speech and seasoned with grace are a bit beyond most of us now. I think we're at the fashion whips and clean house level of indignation. This is the fruit of our accountability imbalance. The guys are starting to see it. If you want an idea of how they feel right now, the analogy I thought of is this. People on the right are super frustrated to watch the left blame us for violence. Or you'll see them say, hey, we both did this to each other. We're equally bad in this, so we both need to back down. We both need to stop. When it is very clearly not fair. Yeah, that's how these men feel when we say that they are the cause of the problem or that there's this equal blame that they carry for what's happening between the sexes right now. No, they are not the bottleneck. They want to date and they want to date real women, normal ones, average ones. Girls don't want to date average men. We say to the guys, you are at fault, or at best, it's equal blame. When if you just ignore for a second how women say they feel about what's going on, and you just look at the data, you look at the way they talk, you look at their choices, it's so clearly not equal. And the guys are starting to get fed up with us continuing to blame them anyway. For a man, it is deeply frustrating to be so disaffected by so much rotten fruit from so much sin, and then to be told that you are to blame. We should not be surprised at all that the back door is so big. We, the married men of the church, we were too cowardly to endure the guilt and scorn our women direct at us when we tell them things they don't want to hear. So we just stopped to protect our own peace. But our peace cost us a generation of young men. We played favorites, we chose women over them, and we lost them because of it. We're already paying for it. We can all see the world going insane with delusion, depravity, and hateful evil right now. And at some point, we're going to realize the solution isn't just about political tribes because politics aren't the root of the problem. They're a symptom. We can't fix it that way even if we wanted to. You can't reason someone out of a position they weren't reasoned into. Progressives chose those beliefs because their sense of morality makes it feel right to them. You can't change those gut feelings with any kind of argument. The only way to fix the problem is to bring them to Jesus so that the Holy Spirit can work in their hearts and heal their twisted sense of morality. Here's the problem. We need workers to do that. How do we expect to keep the workers around if we're making their suffering worse? We need young men in church right now. They're the ones who decide where the culture goes and how it's enforced. They're the ones who either allow this insanity to continue or put their lives on the line to end it. But we don't have them. Not enough. The men who get stuck single get elbowed out of the church. There's nothing there for them. We don't care about them. We don't particularly treat them all that well. We do nothing but blame them and pummel them and then extract as much effort and resources we can from them while we give them basically nothing. We make it impossible for them to thrive here and force them to look outside the church for relief from the sins that we've allowed to fester. So they leave. And once they get isolated, they're easy targets for the devil and his to pick off. After a while, they stop saying, "I am Charlie Kirk." They stop being Charlie Kirk and they become Hassan.
Liberals, you need to be gutting them. Very specific. You need to be shanking these motherfuckers.
They become Destiny.
What cleansing?
When we side conservatives in this country.
Are you going to be on the streets with your glasses?
Maybe. I got to go back to Nebraska and grab it.
When church doesn't work for them, they turn to those guys. And they turn into those guys. We have to clean this up now or that line's going to keep going down. And we're going to be done. Don't think for a second, by the way, that can't happen to us. It's already happened in Europe. The seat of Christendom. It's not that anymore. It's more like the seat of Islam now. It has been for a long time. See, I agree with Nick Freitas that it's time to defeat progressive ideology. Not tolerate it. Not coexist with it. Defeat it. But I also agree with Constantine Kissin, that we will never defeat their way while our way isn't working for young men. You will never defeat socialism while young people are locked out of the housing market, no matter how hard they work. You will never defeat atheism while young men can't get married in church. And you will never defeat wokeness while we simultaneously exploit and blame men, just like the feminists who created wokeness. If you want to defeat wokeness, the Christian way needs to work for these guys on a practical level. And right now, it does not. Oh, but it does work. Look at all these young married men we have at our church. Yeah, those are the elite handful who had enough of what women are looking for to make it into the club. The rest got filtered out. Of course, our church has all the married men. It's called selection bias. That's how it works. The men at the very top that the women actually do want got married. Of course they did. And of course they're the ones that stuck around and planted roots. They're the ones that have the incentive to. And all the ones who got filtered out in that selection bias, all the ones the women didn't want, which is most of them, they're the ones tweeting about retaliation and the reckoning that's coming. These guys don't want to rebuild society. They want to tear it down because they know at this rate, if they don't, they'll die alone and they have nothing to lose. Now, they're going to push the pendulum back away from the favoritism of women that our culture has celebrated, the favoritism our churches have embraced, to the opposite extreme. And the Holy Spirit will not be in the hearts of the men who are doing the pushing. Yes, a lot of young men are moving to the right, and some of them are going to go to church for a little while because of Charlie Kirk. But because church doesn't work for them, it's becoming an increasingly atheist right. And an angry, godless right wing should terrify you just as much as a godless left. Because when they go on a rampage, when they fight back, as history has told us time and again, they will. It won't just be against the left. It'll be against anyone that caused them to suffer. And they will count us in that because we played favorites and we didn't pick them. It's time to grow up. Grow a pair. Stop being so delusionally romantic about women and so afraid of hurting their feelings that we just let them get away with everything. It's time to start advocating for men in the church. It's time to grow a pair and start holding women accountable fairly. Grow a pair and endure the scorn and hatred of the women of the church who will be offended by the suggestion that they sin too. And not just in a vague general sense, but specifics. Here's how you sin in every gritty detail. Here's your depravity, your power seeking, your manipulative shaming, your delusion, and your utter selfishness in all its disgusting horror, just like we do with men. Just as often as we do with men. And I know, I'm sure there's a lot of people that are not happy that I'm saying this. They're going to cast all kind of aspersions at me and say that what I'm saying is sexist and whatever. And here's the thing. If you think I'm wrong about this, hey, great, fine. If you don't like this, show me how I'm wrong and I'll stop. I don't want to do this. I don't want people thinking I'm the bad Christian because I don't have enough faith, because I'm the one that points out the structural problems. I don't want to be hated by people for what I say on the internet. I don't want to take slings and arrows in the comments sections. I don't want my friends looking at me sideways because they don't think I'm on their team. I don't want to get pushed out of friend groups because of this. So please prove to me that I don't need to. If you think that we're getting everything right, show me the facts, show me the data, show me the reality, show me the stories. Go talk to these guys who are leaving. Ask them why, and then tell me why it's happening. Or if you think it's just me, I'm just a bad person, you think I'm being divisive or just drama farming, or, oh, you just have a critical spirit or whatever. Hey, great, fine. I will be the first to agree with you after you prove me wrong. You know what's funny? When I bring up the favoritism and obvious worship of women, I hear people say a lot of stuff about it. I hear downplaying and minimizing and deflections, but I never hear people saying that we don't do it. Yes, I'm sure a lot of young guys are going to start coming back to church for a little bit, thanks to Charlie. But I can't see any reason why they won't leave too. For the same reason that guys have been leaving for decades, the moment they find out that we play favorites around here and they're not it, why would they stick around? The reason for the exodus is still there. It hasn't been dealt with. So what if there's more people coming in the doors now? We're not going to keep them unless we change. And I know a lot of people will say, well, no, it's not up to us whether they stay. It's up to God. But that's not true, is it? If we're Christ's ambassadors, then how we treat people will communicate to them who we think God is and what he's like. If we act like the feminists were right, women are better, men are the problem children, they sin more, women deserve more than they do, women are the prize, we're saying with our actions that God plays favorites too. Why would they stick around with a God like that? We have an incredible opportunity for the gospel to fix the mistakes we made with millennials and fix it for Gen Z and Gen Alpha. Bring those guys. We failed with millennials. They are the generation that's actually the least churched right now. We have an opportunity to bring Gen Z back in if we repent. But I have not seen an ounce of willingness to budge an inch on any of these issues in any part of the church right now. At this point, I'm starting to lose hope that anyone with influence in the church is ever going to make the changes that we need to make in order to reverse course on this. I'm feeling about 90% sure that if we want to make changes, we're going to have to build a new thing entirely. And this has been a feature of church history forever. There have been times where the entrenched establishment of the church gets so stuck in a way that's not working, but it just cannot see its flaws. And so it cannot repent. And so people have to get out and create a new thing. Not a new God. There's no Jesus 2.0 out there that's going to fix the situation, but a new structure. I don't know what that looks like. I don't even think that I'm the right guy to do it. That's why I've been fighting so hard for years to show this stuff to the people who have already built churches, because I don't see myself as someone who even can. You know, I'm an engineer brain, not a visionary leader brain. I come from a family of engineers, diagnostic engineers to be specific. We see the world in terms of processes and systems and how those things interact. And we look for places where they're broken and we try our best to fix them. That's how our brains work. That's how I was raised. I don't have the leadership gene, I guess. I don't know. I'll do it if I have to, if nobody else steps up, but I don't know what it looks like. So I guess at the end of this, I have to ask you guys, what do you think? Most of the people actually watching this are the guys who are the ones who are frustrated, who are the ones on the outside looking in. And right now, it's up to you guys what we need to do next. So you guys tell me what you would want to see. How can we either fix the church as it is, or what do we build ourselves instead? What does that look like? You guys tell me down in the comments. Sorry, guys. I'm a little more feisty than usual. My mom died out of nowhere 2 weeks ago. So yeah, I'm a little more on edge than usual. But yeah, you guys tell me what you think. Tell me what we need, and we'll go from there. Stay weird. Get out of here.